All right, longer. Let's do it.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
You're a daisy if you do. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show, where it's always time to have a tombstone reference, any time of the day. My name is Patrick Madrid, not Doc Holliday. My number is 888-914-9149. Cyrus, I'm trying really hard not to slide into the tombstone references. We've done that before, so we will avoid it.
My finger was on the button to play more. I'm like, no, Cyrus, don't do it. Just let him get into the show today.
You'll know, Daisy.
All right, no, don't do that.
Because you want to press that. Go ahead and press one.
All right. Here's a good one.
I don't think I'll let you arrest us today, B.N.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I like that.
That's a good one. All right. Well, we have some serious business to take care of. First of all, my phone number, 888-914-9149. We do have lines. It's kind of unusual to have this many lines open this early in the program. Normally, the lines are stacked, but we have some open. So call me, 888-914-9149. Big news out of Mexico. Two big stories out of Mexico yesterday. The first, and here's how it's being reported by the New York Times. And you can imagine that they are pleased by this development. Mexico's Supreme Court voted yesterday to decriminalize abortion. Criminalizing abortion is unconstitutional, Mexico's Supreme Court ruled on Tuesday, setting a precedent that could lead to the legalization of the procedure across this conservative Catholic country of about 130 million people. The unanimous ruling from the nation's top court follows years of efforts by a growing women's movement in Mexico that has repeatedly taken to the streets of major cities to demand greater rights and protections. The decision, which opens the door for Mexico to become the most populous Latin American country to allow abortion, was met with, as you might imagine, elation by feminist activists and dismay by conservative politicians and the powerful Catholic Church. Today is an historic day for the rights of all Mexican women, said Chief Justice Arturo Saldivar. He said this as the judges' votes were cast. It is a watershed in the history of the rights of all women, especially the most vulnerable. Well, now, wait a minute. Let's pause there for a second. Señor Chief Justice, it's a watershed in the history of the rights of all women, especially the most vulnerable. Well, I should think that the most vulnerable would be those who are not born yet. What about those little women, those unborn babies? You don't care about them, do you? They don't care about them. The decision does not, well, I take that back. They do care about them insofar as they are a profit center, because you see, there's a lot of money to be made from abortion. And as I say all the time, don't get between big abortion and its money, because they will run you over if they possibly can. And I could easily imagine that a big abortion, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, and maybe they are helping some political campaigns. You know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. So lots of money involved, and you don't want to get in the way of them and their money. Actually, I do, but they hate that. Back to the New York Times. The decision does not automatically make abortion legal across Mexico, experts said, but it does set a binding precedent for judges across the country. Abortion rights advocates say they plan to use the ruling to challenge laws in the vast majority of Mexican states that mandate jail time or other criminal penalties for women who have the procedure. For now, analysts said, women arrested for having an abortion can sue state authorities to have the charges dropped. Activists also plan to push state authorities to free women now serving prison terms for having had abortions. The Mexican Supreme Court's decision is likely to reverberate across Latin America, where victories by women's rights movements in one country often catalyze efforts in another. The legalization of abortion in Argentina last year was celebrated in other nations. It was also deplored in other nations, and the green handkerchiefs brandished by activists there have become widespread at women's protests across the region, including in Mexico. Leaders of the Catholic Church, whose regional influence has been waning but still carries considerable weight, swiftly condemn the ruling. Those of us who are convinced of the value of life do not have a need for a homicidal law like the one they are approving, read a tweet from the Episcopal Conference of Mexico, an organization of Catholic bishops in Mexico. Today's ruling follows efforts by women's groups that began well over a decade ago with the legalization of abortion in Mexico City in 2007. Groups then successfully pushed for the procedure to be decriminalized in the states of Oaxaca, Hidalgo, and Veracruz. Now, I want to pause here, and I'm basically done with this article. You can read the rest of it because it's just jibber jabber. They reference the legalization of abortion in Mexico City in 2007. Do you know what happened in Mexico City on that day? Cyrus, pop quiz. Do you know what happened in Mexico City on the same day in 2007 when they legalized abortion for Mexico City?
Was there an earthquake?
No.
No, I don't know.
Okay, so you have seen, maybe you haven't been down to Mexico City to see it with your own eyes, but you've seen the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, right?
Oh, of course, yes.
Okay. So she is arrayed in finery. She is clearly a queen in her, in the way she's dressed. She's also, it's very interesting, she's blocking the sun. Now, the Toltecs, the Mayans, the Aztecs, the various indigenous tribes in Mexico and Central America and even South America, they had a very high regard for the sun. So just outside of Mexico City, there are two massive pyramids, the pyramids of Teotihuacan. One is for the sun, that's the bigger one. The other one is for the moon. So they had a kind of worship of the sun. And so when this image of Mary was miraculously imparted onto the rough fibers of the tilma that Juan Diego was wearing, she's standing in front of the sun. She's blocking out the sun. And that in a sense, or that in a real way, was a message to them that she's more powerful than even that false god that they deem to worship. But another feature of the tilma is that the woman, Our Lady, is clearly pregnant. And you can see the baby bump. She's also moving. She's stepping forward. You can see one foot sort of raised. The other one, her legs are in such a manner that you can see that she's moving forward. She has a baby in her tummy. And on that day, the very day in Mexico City when abortion was legalized, the tilma in the Basilica of Our Lady Guadalupe lit up. There was a bright light that emanated from the area of the tilma where the baby would be, baby Jesus. And this is captured on video and captured in countless photographs. And it was startling when this happened because there was no scientific explanation for it. You know, there are lights on the tilma. So as you pass on the conveyor belt below, you pass by and you look up and you can see it behind bulletproof glass, and it's there, but it's illuminated so you can see it. But this light came impossibly. It came from inside the tilma itself. It's shown out in the form of a baby, right in that spot of her body. So that's what happened on that day in 2007 when Mexico City legalized abortion. And it kind of came and went, caused a stir. People noticed it. I'm sure the pro-abortion people didn't care. Even if they did notice it, they didn't care. But it seemed to be a kind of portent. I remember thinking, what does this mean? What, this is a very soft and gentle kind of portent, but that's what it struck me as being. Okay, let's fast forward now to yesterday. So the Supreme Court of Mexico, they legalize the, as I just described to you, they legalized or decriminalized abortion. And what happens? Later that same day, there is a massive earthquake. The Richter scale estimates vary. I've seen as low as 7.1, as high as 7.4. Amazingly, only one person that is known to be dead has been reported. Very little by way of damage. There's some damage, not much. But only one person that we know of, at least, was killed. But this was a major earthquake, and it struck in Mexico City. Now, I retweeted some video of this. If you happen to be on Twitter, take a look at my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid. I don't know if you saw this yet, Cyrus, but there's some video of people that are out in the streets. It struck about 14 miles outside of Acapulco. And there's this amazing lightning storm going on at the same time. I couldn't detect any rain. It seemed as though everybody was dry, but there's this freakish lightning storm going on. And during the lightning storm is when this earthquake hit, and people were panicking. As you can imagine, Mexico has been racked with earthquakes, and countless people have died over the years because of these terrible earthquakes. And I can imagine that they were probably thinking, is this another one of those big earthquakes? And they're standing out in the street. There's one video of people in a cable car, the kind that you would take, you know, to ride from one place to another, suspended up in the air. And there's video from the ground showing the cable car just kind of bouncing up in the air during the earthquake. And there's video from inside the cable car, people on their phones. And one lady is crying and she's praying and she's asking Our Lady to help them. And this is all going on in the midst of this lightning storm. So my question is, do you think that's happenstance? Do you think that's a coincidence? Is it merely a coincidence? Or it just happened to have a 7-point whatever earthquake on the same day that the Supreme Court of Mexico legalizes abortion? I don't think so. I don't think that's a coincidence. And if it is a coincidence, I mean, my gosh, what an incredible coincidence that is. If you ask me, I think that is a kind of portent, a reminder. And I must say this, I marvel at God's restraint. I marvel at, when I consider, for example, how God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, and scientific evidence is catching up with the biblical account of this. I shared this on the show a couple of years ago, the new scientific evidence that demonstrates that some incredibly hot burst of energy was expended above the site of where Sodom and Gomorrah would have stood at one time. And they know this from the kind of glass that is embedded into the ground. And they know that kind of phenomenon can only take place with extremely high temperatures, something like, you know, maybe 1,000, 2,000 degrees, that it could turn sand into glass like that. And they found this, and they found it in the area where Sodom and Gomorrah once stood. But anyway, I marvel at how God punished Sodom and Gomorrah the way he did. And yet, on a much greater scale, on a much vaster scale, the sins that cry out to heaven every day, not just in this country, not just in Mexico, but around the world, generally speaking. And it seems like these gentle reminders, the miraculous, that's what I call it, a miraculous flash of light coming out from the abdomen, the womb of the image of Mary on the Tilma in 2007, on the day that they legalized abortion in Mexico City, a massive earthquake yesterday that didn't kill anybody but one person. I think those are reminders, and what I guess I'm saying here is that I marvel at the fact that they're so gentle. I'm grateful. Believe me, Cyrus, you're grateful too, right? You don't want to be anywhere near Sodom and Gomorrah when that thing goes down, right?
That goes without saying.
Yeah. So on the one hand, I feel a certain sense of, okay, thank you, Lord. you've shown before that sometimes punishments can be extremely stringent, and we certainly deserve punishment nowadays. And these reminders, I guess for me, the thing is, I wonder if anybody is noticing. I know I'm not the only one who's drawn a correlation, a what-if correlation between the legalization, or the decriminalization, rather, of abortion in Mexico and this earthquake. But I can't help but thinking that that might be another reminder from God to say, stop it, you guys, knock it off. And then what? And then what comes? That's the thing that I don't want to find out, quite frankly. 888-914-9149. And isn't it interesting that this happened within a matter of days after Texas, the great state of Texas, went in the other direction by making abortion virtually impossible or illegal, because by 6 weeks you can detect a heartbeat. And so this now is posing a grave threat, and I'm happy to see it, to Roe versus Wade. So I find that interesting too. Our neighbors to the south are going in the wrong direction, even as we, at least in Texas anyway, are starting to go little by little, maybe in the right direction. It's all very interesting, don't you think? 888-914-9149. Let's go to Jody in Las Vegas. Good morning, Jody.
your show. I'm a huge fan. Thank you so much for all you
Thank
do.
Thank you, Jody.
I had a question. My pleasure. I had a comment actually about the Roe versus Wade, the new Texas law.
Yeah.
Two of the things. The first one I wanted to say was that I know that President Biden and Nancy Pelosi are quote and Catholics, I guess, or supposedly Catholic, and they have really sort of placed their Catholic faith in like the second seat before what they believe is their service to this nation, and they so fervently want to protect these Supreme Court decisions and have such a respect for the judicial system as part of their service. And I wondered that if, you know, we see what's happening in Texas, and should this, you know, start a momentum around the country? I mean, if Roe versus Wade eventually were to be reversed, I would wonder what their position would be then. And I would wonder if they would so viciously and so fervently want to proclaim this defense of the decision. It was just a thought that that I wanted to bring up.
So the thought, if I can just make sure I understand it, the thought is that you're expressing a kind of, you know, it's remarkable that we're moving in the right direction with this new development in Texas, for example. But as for President Biden and Speaker Pelosi, you're right. I mean, they are Catholic, and ontologically, theologically, they're Catholic because they're baptized. And so by virtue of that fact, they were incorporated into the body of Christ. But there's a difference between being a Catholic and being a committed Catholic, a devout Catholic, a sincere Catholic. Those are the kind of things where one wonders, doesn't one, when you see somebody who on the one hand touts the Catholic faith that they don't really seem to observe. And that's where I think people get bogged down and they say, you may be a Catholic, but you're not a good Catholic, at least judging from your actions.
Right. It just doesn't seem to be very, very consistent. And along with that, I wanted to say that I was thinking it might be beneficial for us to even possibly consider, as far as the Texas law goes, I know that the people are being rewarded for ratting someone out or saying that someone has an, you know, knows someone that's about to get an abortion. And I know that was discussed, and I really do understand. I know it was discussed in your show, and it's been discussed, you know, in other areas of Relevant Radio. And I do understand that. And for the most part, I agree with that. But then I was starting to think about it, and I thought, you know, we're Catholic, and we do believe that life begins at conception. And so what's the difference of us, hypothetically speaking, it wasn't a fetus. Let's say it was a child of ours. And let's say someone had taken that child and was going to murder that child. And we would have billboards and we would have, you know, rewards for tips and please, you know, if there's anything you can do to find my child and save my child from, you know, harm. I think that it might be okay to consider that, you know, we've worked so hard to get to this point, and all the memoirs we say, and just the fact that, I mean, Texas alone, I've heard, is one of the states that has the least amount of abortions, but they are still at an average, I heard, like 50,000 babies are aborted each year there.
Do me a favor, Jody. I like what you're saying. I just don't know the point. I can't quite figure out what the point is that you're making. Could you tie it up for me?
I guess that for us to just consider accepting that and being a little like accepting and considering the law with the fact that they're allowing to monetize, to pay people for tips or pay people to save an unborn child. I think it's, I know that it's, it doesn't, it seems like it's an infringement upon privacy. I guess what I'm saying is that, as Catholics, I feel like that might be a key to success for the program and the law.
It might
just be something to consider.
It might, and certainly whenever there's a profit motive, that will get people's attention. But as I said yesterday, I think that that provision in the law taints the power of the law because it makes it somewhat tawdry by, as you pointed out, monetizing or financially incentivizing people to snitch on each other. And that in itself, I don't find helpful. I think I said it on the show, but my view is that rather than incentivize people to become like, you know, one person vigilantes, instead, you know, if somebody is fined, let's say an abortion doctor or something like that, if somebody is fined successfully, then that money should go to assisting pro-life organizations. So education for the children and food and diapers and housing for the mom and the child long after the child. I have continued as long as it's necessary. Now, in my further studies, I'll have to leave it at this, Jody, because I have to take a break, but in my further studies over the last day or so, I found that Texas already donates a massive amount of money to these kinds of pro-life organizations to help them help the women and the children after they're born, which is great. But I just don't like the way in which the average person can make a buck off of the horror of an abortion. It just doesn't sit well with me. And I think that that may be, in the long run, one of the reasons why the opposition could be successful in trying to thwart this law. I think if that provision weren't there, it would be much less of an opportunity for them to do something to thwart it. We'll see what happens. But anyway, Jody, thank you. I wish I had more time. I wish we could talk longer, but we can't. So thank you for the phone call. I'll be back with more, including in a little bit, I want to share with you what some of the signs of the Antichrist, four prophetic messages that St. John Henry Newman gave for what to watch for when you think you might know who the Antichrist is. I'll tell you what that is as well on the other side of this break.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Wow, this is powerful, Cyrus. I like this. What's this called? Okay, that's all right. Cyrus is busy right now. I shouldn't be pestering him. Welcome back, 888-914-9149. Back to the phones we will go. Let's start off now with Tina in Redding, California. Hi, Tina.
Morning. I wanted to comment on the abortion issue that you were speaking of just now with the other person that was on the phone.
Right.
This is very embarrassing to me, but when I was 14, my mother made me get an abortion, and I was only 14 years old. And I regret that so much. So I want to reach out to women that are thinking about an abortion when there's options and, you know, there are many options. I am pro-life now because it hurt so bad, but I wonder what my child would be like now, the voice, what color hair, and these women need to think about this.
Yeah. How old are you now, Tina?
I'm sorry?
How old are you now?
I'm 46.
Okay. So a lot of time has gone by. If you don't mind my asking a personal question, Tina.
No,
not
at all.
What was the relationship with your mom like after that, after she forced you to have an abortion? Could you ever look at her the same way?
My mother was a terrible mother.
Mm-hmm.
My mother introduced me to drugs. My mother introduced me to alcohol. My mother introduced me to bars.
when I was like 15, 16 years old, I'd have to do my homework at the bar. And then I'd go home and I'd have to go get her at 4 o'clock in the morning because she was too drunk to walk home.
Oh,
she had no scruples.
I guess.
And I don't talk to her to this day.
Have you ever told her you forgive her for this? Have you been able to forgive her for what she did?
Yes, I have forgiven her. I don't forget,
right. But
I have forgiven her because it's the right thing to do.
Amen to that. Was she involved in some way, maybe through neglect, in a way that caused you to get pregnant? Or was that something beyond her
involvement? I was 14, and I was actually with a man that was 20, and my mother approved of it. And I feel now, as an adult, that the boyfriend I had at the time that this happened with was a pedophile.
Yeah,
he was 20 years old, and I was 14.
Did he ever get caught? Did you ever tell the police?
No, never. It was just swept under the rug.
I'm so sorry. So for your own healing over the last 30 plus years, how has that gone? How has your healing process been?
My healing process is I do a lot of meditation. I do my rosary every day, sometimes twice a day. I use mindfulness to alleviate the pain because it, to this day, it's still painful.
Now, I'm presuming at some point you went to confession. Is that part of your healing?
I'm a new converted Catholic, and I've only been to confession twice. And I've been too embarrassed to confess that.
Okay. Let me offer you this advice, Tina. That is going to be a huge step forward for you when you bring this into the confessional. Now, keep in mind, you were 14 years old. You were a girl. And your mother, as you said, forced you to do this. So you don't bear the grave responsibility for this that your mother does. And to whatever extent, maybe you could have fought back. I don't want to do this. I mean, I don't need to know the details of what happened. But for your own sake, you should bring this to confession and just let the priest know. I was 14 years old. My mother encouraged this despicable relationship with this man. I got pregnant. She forced me to have an abortion. And I was young and clueless and scared. I didn't know. But get all that out there. The priest is not going to judge you. He's certainly not going to look down on you. He's going to be in awe of you because you have the courage to tell God in the sacrament of confession about what happened and be truly sorry for it. And then the healing can really begin. That's when it will really begin to take root in a way that will help to transform you and help remove some of the pain. So that would be my encouragement.
Well,
Tina.
I just went to confession, my second confession, because I was getting the sacrament of the sick and I felt that I shouldn't deserve it unless I went to confession. And I was, like I told you, I was just too embarrassed and too scared.
Understood. I totally understand. That's a natural human emotion. You don't have any reason to be embarrassed because this was done to you. It wasn't something that you did. But in any case, here's the thing to remember. The sacrament of confession is only effective. It's only going to give you the spiritual fruitfulness and the grace if it's a good confession. What I mean by that is it has to be complete. So if you go to confession and let's say you've got 5 mortal sins and you confess 4 of them, but you don't confess the 5th one because you're too embarrassed by it. Well, it not only is not a good confession and there's no grace, but it adds another sin on top of everything else, which is called the sin of sacrilege. Now, if you didn't know that, and it may well be that you didn't know that, So I'm not blaming you. But if
no,
it wasn't...
I didn't know.
Okay. So that's why I'm glad we're having this conversation, because you might have gone on who knows how long without realizing that if you don't confess all the serious sins that you're aware of. Now, if you've forgotten something because it happened long ago and you don't remember, when you do remember it at some point, you can bring it to confession. But God wants to forgive you. He loves you. He's ready to heal you and forgive you. But in order for that to happen, you need to just be really honest and say, here's everything. I'm not holding anything back. And yes, I'm embarrassed and I feel all kinds of terrible emotions, but I'm going to put all this at the foot of the cross and let Jesus heal me. So when you go back to confession, just say everything. You go through your examination of conscience. Maybe you've heard of that term. That's where you do your inventory. And you look back and say, since my last good confession, and in this case, the two that came before, you know, they were incomplete. They were missing that sin. Just do an inventory, and as best you can, ask the Holy Spirit to enlighten your mind. And as best you can, put down, if you want to put it on paper, you can do that, and then, you know, shred it or burn it afterward. But just put down the number and kind of any serious sins. And you'll need a good examination of conscience to guide you. One source, and this is free, you can get it at the Fathers of Mercy website. It's fathersofmercy.org. And they have a good, helpful examination of conscience. So it'll walk you through the Ten Commandments. So, I mean, there are some sins that people just don't realize that that's sinful. They just never knew. They didn't. Nobody told them. So this way you can go through and say, oh, okay, yeah, I did that a bunch of times. I didn't realize it was seriously sinful. Now, your culpability would be greatly diminished if you didn't know. Ignorance, you know. But in any case, have your examination of conscience. And then before you, or when you go into the confessional, just say the number and kind. You know, here's the kind of sin. I committed the sin of fornication. And it happened X number of times, or I don't remember how many times it happened. It just, I've forgotten how many times. Then you've confessed that sin. Okay. I did this and I did it 3 times and I'm truly sorry for that. Okay. Then you move on to the next one. Once you're done, once you've gone through your list that you've developed with your examination of conscience, then when you receive absolution from the priest, everything is taken care of. Everything is removed and you are forgiven. God loves you. He wants you to be happy. This is why Jesus established the sacrament, so that you can know that you are right with God. And I can guarantee you, you are going to feel so good, so elated when you make that confession, when the time comes. And I just want to encourage you to do that.
I'm so scared. I want to do it. You know, you explain it really well. I listen to your show every morning.
Thank you.
And I just love it. And it makes sense what you're instructing me to do.
I'm glad.
And I'm going to do it. I'm going to make another appointment for confession.
Good. And tell the priest, say, I came to realize, I discovered that the two confessions that I made before, you know, I did it the wrong way because I held back a sin. And I want to confess everything now, Father. And he'll understand. He's not going to judge you. He's not going to look down on you. He's there to help you.
I hope not. I'm so pro-life now that as an adult, and it is something that, well, I told you, it has stuck with me, but...
Yeah. It's time for the healing now. It's time for that healing. It's been a long time overdue, hasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I encourage you to do that, Tina. I'll be praying for you, and I'll ask everybody listening right now to pray for you, that you'll have that courage and the serenity that will come from making a good, honest confession where you don't hold anything back. And you're going to feel so much better. And quite frankly, the healing, the deep healing can really begin. Not that it hasn't been happening thus far, but it will continue and it will get better. And you'll feel better. Okay,
Patrick. Thank you so much for your advice and in your opinion, and I really respect it, and I really respect you.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you. Well, just know that I'm praying for you, Tina, and everyone listening will be praying for you as well. Thank you so much. God bless you. I'll be right back.
The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
Let's say that you are alive at the time of the Antichrist. Would you know what signs to look for? Would you know the indications that this is the Antichrist? Would you know? I mean, I think a lot of people wouldn't know. Well, St. John Henry Newman, he has four prophetic messages that tell you what to watch for. If it so happens that you and I are alive during the time of the Antichrist, possible. Some days I think it might even be probable. I don't know. But I'm going to share that with you in just a little bit. So when we're going to get through several more phone calls, but this is coming, and I don't want you to miss it because it's very good. And in the times in which we live, I think it's very pertinent to you and to me. Let's go to Trey in Albuquerque. Good morning, Trey.
Good morning, Patrick. I'll be your Huckleberry.
You're a daisy if you do.
There you go. I just had a question about sorcery and children. So I know that there's been like a lot of talk, for instance, like going way back to when Harry Potter was popular and everything. And for me and myself, of course, at first, you know, when I would read like the Old Testament, and there's a prophet, I forget which one, where he was testing the pagan priests to...
It was Isaiah.
Burn their meat. Was it Isaiah that called down lightning from heaven after he put water on the...
Yeah, he poured water all over the campfires, and then they all caught fire. Yeah, that's the one.
So back then, I was thinking, there's, of course, these, like, false gods. But then, you know, as, like, I was reading more and studying more, I realized that there's sorcerers, there's mediums, there's all this spirituality about... the Satan and like the demons trying to influence people and everything. So, our kids are into, you know, watching all kinds of entertainment and mostly Disney, mostly, other programs like that. And of course there's some shows and movies that talk about magic and everything. And so my wife was concerned about them being exposed to these things that have these images of these mystic beings and, you know, dark, magic and all that stuff. So, I was thinking, you know, because I was studying the writings of Gabriel Amorth about The Exorcist Tells a Story.
Yep.
And how he talks about, you know, about like, you know, the evil eye and curses and spells and things like that. So I was thinking that wouldn't this be an opportunity instead of, you know, shunning all programs and all shows that display this type of thing? Is just why not use that as an opportunity to teach them, you know, that says, you know what, you know, these
are
actually 8, 10, and 12.
Okay.
And so I was thinking that, you know, just, you know, tell them, you know, okay, yes, this is just for fun and entertainment, but this is the truth about what magic is, how it's a work of the devil, and that you have to be aware that the glory of God, because when you opened up about the supernatural portent about the Tilma, yeah. I thought, yes, that's an excellent example of how God has supernatural glory displayed here on earth. And that is way above any of these, you know, practicing and very real magic makers, you know, sorcerers and witchcraft and things like that. So is your question to
I just want to make sure I understand that you would, for example, sit down with your kids and watch a show that has some of this sorcery, and you would explain it to them and say, this is why, and this is where you have to fill in the blank. This is why what? This is why you shouldn't watch it, or this is why if you watch it, you should discard these things. I think that's where this might have a problem, because to draw a parallel, if I may, not that you would ever do this, but it's to use a somewhat more outlandish example. obviously, you don't want your kids to see pornography. So it seems to me that if you were to put on some mildly pornographic program and say, see, kids, this is what you're not supposed to look at. This is wrong. You shouldn't look at it. Well, I can imagine in your kids' minds they're saying, but we are looking at it. Like right now we're looking at it. And I don't think it's necessary to show them some mild form of that in order to warn them about the dangers of pornography. Now, that is a more extreme example. I grant you that. But in this case, I don't see the facility or the utility maybe in showing the kids stuff that's magic. You can talk about it and explain to them in the abstract, here's the problem with this kind of thing, without using the thing itself to explain it to them, if that makes sense. In other words, I think you can accomplish your goal.
Here's another practical day-to-day example is that our kids go to school. They are exposed to some students who sometimes use profanity.
Right.
There's no way to avoid it. Sometimes they come across people who take the Lord's name in vain out loud. So I've been teaching them that if someone says the says God's name like in vain, just say out loud like yourself, "Blessed be the name of God," just to cancel out that, you know, curse or.
I agree. And that my mom taught me to do that from the time I was little. Praise be the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, or blessed be God, things like that. So from the time I was little, I just reflexively would do that when I would hear the Lord's name taken in vain.
Exactly.
I like that idea. Totally like it. All I'm saying, Trey, is I don't know if it would, I get the impression it probably would not be helpful to show them the very thing that you're telling them not to look at. You can talk about it and explain it to them. So, for example, you wouldn't put on a movie that's filled with blasphemy and profanity for your kids and say, see, guys, this is what you're not supposed to listen to. You can just explain it to them without putting them at risk of hearing it, I guess. You see what I mean? Do you see where I'm coming from on that?
Yeah. I understand what you're saying, but it's just that because it's in everyday life, it's in everyday entertainment.
Right.
You know, because Disney is a big, giant promoter of this kind of entertainment, going all the way back to Fantasia and the ghosts and the devil. And it goes up until today, like in the Marvel movies, you know, the same kind of thing. So they're going to be exposed to it anyway. So it's like I need to use that as an opportunity. Just as when someone uses a bad word, I always tell them, don't forget, profanity is the crutch of the ignorant. And we use it as a way to show them what not to do.
Right. I'm with you, Trey. I agree with you in principle. Please don't misunderstand my comments. I agree with you. And I think you're wise as a father to pursue this course of action with your kids, to teach them based upon what they see all around them. Absolutely, I'm with you. My only dissent, I guess, would be I do believe you can accomplish the very same thing without showing them or without, you know, putting this in front of them as a way to do it. I think you can accomplish that, in fact, even more effectively without immersing them in the thing itself. That's all.
I understand.
It's a strategic adjustment. That's all.
Yeah. It's just that, you know, they watch all kinds of shows and sometimes there's like a scene of, you know, we're going to make like a potion. So it's like, okay, I can't help like what they're watching all the time.
Oh, but you can,
though. Because we thought that Disney was like a good.
Yeah, see, here's maybe if I can intervene on this point, Trey. You absolutely can control what these kids watch. In fact, you must control what they watch. Otherwise, they're going to be, you know, high-functioning atheists by the time they get through college. And so I guess this is the missing piece of the puzzle here, is that it's not inevitable that they're going to see these things if you don't allow them to see them. If you just say, no more Disney Channel, we're not having it, we're not going to pay for that, and regulate what they watch, regulate what they see. Hopefully you haven't given these children smartphones, but, you know, be very careful and regulate it, not in a tyrannical way, but just in a just and prudent way, regulate it because they're so young. And then that's a big part of the problem gone right there, because it's not inevitable that they'll see these shows if you don't allow them to. Anyway, Trey, this is a very important topic. I'm really glad you brought it up, and I'm glad we had a chance to speak. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Now we'll go to Mike in Homewood, Illinois. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Patrick. Good morning. This is the highlight of my Wednesday, and I hope it's a highlight of yours.
Well, you are easily impressed if this is the highlight of your day. Thank you.
My family and I listen to your show often. We've been homeschooling for many years, so just fans out here in the Midwest. Quick question. This will be much lighter and probably an easy answer for you, considering the other calls that you've gotten today. I'm always curious, why do we say Pontius Pilate and pronounce it as P-I-L-O-T, as opposed to Pontius, what I would assume would be Pilate, of the Latin of P-I-L-A-T-E? I've just always been curious about why, you know, no matter the mass, no matter who it says, it's always Pilate. You know, why do we pronounce it that way, whereas all the other names we pronounce closer to a, you know, Latin or Aramaic way from the Bible?
That's a great question. I think the answer is just that it's an American, not even an Americanism. It's just an Anglicization of the name. So, like, you don't say Paris, you say Paris. Now, the correct pronunciation is Paris, but nobody says that in the United States. We just say Paris, or we say Mexico instead of Mexico. I think that's really all it is. It's an Anglicized way of pronouncing these words that, as you say, would be pronounced in a different way in Latin or Greek. But in English, we just say it the way it's customary to say it. I think that's really the reason.
Okay, now I'm a post-Vatican II baby, so I've attended Latin masses lately. But is this something that maybe grew out of that? I'm assuming that in the Latin mass, I can't remember off the top of my head, that it pronounces Pilate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking here at the Latin Vulgate of Luke chapter 3, for example, where we see the name for the first time in the Gospels. And in the Latin, it's Pontio Pilato. So that in the Latin, you would say it that way, not Pontius Pilate, but Pontio Pilato.
Sure.
In Greek, it's very similar to that. I just looked at the Greek text, and it's very similar to that. So if you were at the Latin Mass and you were following the readings, if they were reading Luke chapter 3, you would hear Pontio Pilato.
Okay. Well, let me ask this. I've been attending. Then one last question, then I'll get off.
Sure.
Thank
sure.
you for this. In a Spanish Mass, how would it be pronounced? Assuming a post Vatican II Mass in Spanish.
Probably the same as the Latin, I would guess. Pontio Pilato.
Okay.
I don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to check it.
Sure.
But I think it's, you know, let me just check it in the Reina Valera. I have it right here. Yeah, it's the same. So Pontio with a C instead of a T. So Luke 3:1 in Spanish would be Pontio Pilato. Nearly identical to the Latin.
Right. Okay. So it's just an Englandization, like you said, that you're right.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you. Have a blessed day and a better weekend.
Thank you very much, Mike. And I wish the same for you. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Now we'll go to Yoli in Anaheim, California. Good morning, Yoli.
Oh, hi. Good morning, Patrick.
Hi. Hi.
I want to say happy birthday to Blessed Mother Mary and Our Lady of All Nations. And I love your loyalty to God, heaven, and bosom Mother Mary. Last year, September, I had mentioned this one family member that was really cold, wouldn't attend church, whatever. So you suggested Surprised by Truth, I believe, that book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I bought it for her. I bought her a gift, and then I got her that also, you know, as a second gift. And at the same time, they had brought me, another friend had brought me an image of Our Lady of All Nations. I gave her the book, Surprised by Truth, to Catalina, who was living with her boyfriend, a Jehovah Witness, for over 15 years. Right after high school, she just turned 18 and moved in with her boyfriend for 15 years. And he would make fun of the saints. He would say, "Why aren't you going to go get your pot of luck, you know, your pot of gold, you know, like in St. Patrick's?" But then I told him, "Read up on the saints; they do exist." So later, months later, Catalina enrolled herself in what is it called, RICA or
RCIA?
The classes.
Right.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, hold on a second. RCIA. Okay.
Right.
She enrolled herself.
For those who don't know, it stands for Rite of Christian Initiation of Adults. It's like the inquiry classes. Go ahead, Yoli. We have about a minute, so go ahead.
Okay, sure. Okay, so she enrolled in her RCA classes and then started attending Mass. May 13, by the grace of God, she made her confirmation. Months later, conversion after conversion, her Jehovah's Witness boyfriend proposed to her. They're engaged today. Today he enrolled himself also in the RCIA classes.
Ah.
And on Easter, he's going to be, on Easter, he's going to be getting, you know, get baptized and make his confirmation. I mean, just, they're attending like mass every Sunday. I mean, it's just like total conversion. And I want to thank you.
Did this happen, Yoli, because you gave them a copy of that book? Was that the catalyst?
I did give her you suggested to give her the book, Surprised by Truth.
Yeah.
And just blessings after blessings or miracles after miracles, conversion after conversion, not just one, but both. Wow. So they're engaged today and they're not living together as boyfriend and girlfriend. They have a two-story apartment. So he sleeps upstairs and she sleeps downstairs or vice versa.
You did a great, great work for this couple, Yoli. God bless you. May God reward you for doing what you could to try to help them. And as you said, look at the miracles. God is ready to do a miracle. We just have to be willing to help him. Thank you, Yoli. That makes my day. I really appreciate it. I'll be back with hour two and the information about the Antichrist right after this.